put item number 12.
Item number 12 is from the Department of Administrative Services, an informational report on the five-year plan. There's a PowerPoint presentation that was handed out to you, and this is informational, that's otherwise directed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joshua Fudge. I'm a fiscal and management analyst in the Department of Administrative Services Fiscal Division. Assisting me on the computer today is Sarah Jankowski, also from our office. It's my pleasure to present to you on behalf of the Financial Forecasting Workgroup the latest edition of the county's five-year financial forecast. Brief table of contents on the presentation. There's really three parts to it. The first part is sort of an overview of the forecast, how it works, what it's used for, and things like that. The second part is to discuss the existing structural deficit based on the 2011 adopted county operating budget. And the third part is to show the impacts of the state biennial budget and budget repair bill on the forecast. So if you have questions of how the biennial budget will affect things going forward, we'll get to that in part four. First, a brief overview of the financial forecast. It's an Excel-based model developed by the Municast company. It's recommended by the GFOA, which is the Government Finance Officers of America. The process that Milwaukee County has used with this began in late 2008. It is a model that assumes that current levels of service and commitments continue into the future, existing levels of employment, things like that nature, much like the Congressional Budget Office does with the federal budget, assuming existing policy baseline. The goal is to use a transparent process and assumptions to develop a baseline scenario of the county's financial fiscal health. All of the assumptions that are developed are reviewed by a work group made up of DAS Fiscal, County Board, staff, and outside experts. The model provides us the ability to do what-if analysis, such as we'll be showing you with the biennial budget. It includes the ability to examine how policy options, economic changes, or outside influences will affect the county's financial position. Once again, the 2011-13 state biennial budget will be in the second half of the program, or the presentation. Okay. As I mentioned, the financial forecasting work group is made up of several individuals. You can see the list there. Members of county board staff, outside experts such as Rob Henkin of the Public Policy Forum, and we certainly hope that John Regini will continue on in the work group as an employee of the city of Wauwatosa, although unfortunately hasn't committed to that just yet. The structure of the forecast, we base everything off of prior year data going back to 1998, and then we forecast based off the latest adopted budget. Within the operating budget, we've created 70 account types on of revenues and expenditures, and those are groups of revenues or expenditures that behave similarly. For instance, utilities are an account type. Family care revenues are an account type. Airport revenues are an account type. Things of that nature. We analyze historical trends of those account types to develop assumptions, and we also try to identify predictive variables from the outside that we can use to make assumptions of how the account types will behave. For instance, with the sales tax account type, we've basically tied our assumption to a forecast provided by the State Department of Revenue on personal income. We forecast our court fees based on the number of cases provided by the courts. For utilities and gasoline, we use forecasts based on the United States Department of Energy. And for medical supplies, we use a CPI index that's provided by the U.S. Department of Commerce. We apply, as I mentioned, we apply each of those assumptions to each account type, and we project out from the last adopted budget. We did include, and hopefully you have, the assumptions for the top 10 revenues and expenditures. On the revenue side, the top 10 revenues account for about $1 billion, or 79% of the county's operating budget. On the expenditure side, those top 10 account types account for about $1.2 billion, about 94% of the operating budget. So plugging all those assumptions and account types into the model shows that the county has a structural deficit, as you've all heard before. This is because expenditures are projected to continue to grow faster than revenues throughout the period 2012 to 2016, with expenditures rising about 5.2% annually and revenues only 4.2% annually. The structural deficit will continue to grow as a percentage of total revenues from just about 1% in 2012 to about 5% in 2016. The major drivers of the structural deficit, one is personnel costs. Personnel costs altogether are forecast to increase about 5.4% annually over the next 5 years. Within that category, fringe benefits are assumed to increase about 7.7%. Personnel costs make up about 37% of the total operating budget, about $484 million. On the revenue side, state and federal revenues in the current model are assumed to grow about 1.2% annually. That's about $370 million, or 29% of total revenues, and again, that does not include the biennial state budget. Discretionary program revenues, those total approximately $220 million. They are projected to increase by about 1.5% annually. This includes revenues that the county can use for whichever purpose it wants. Some of the revenues it has control over the fee structure, for instance, concessions, admissions, things like that. In some cases, it does not have control over the amount that we receive, such as register of deeds fees or investment income or some other fees where the level is set by the state. The existing model also includes an assumption that property taxes will increase about 3.1% annually, and this is based off the actual increase over the past 5 years.
The chairman's not here. Did I hear you say that the personnel costs, that 5.4%, that's over a five-year level?
The projection is that they'll grow 5.4% annually. Yep. Continuing on with the drivers, one of the issues is that the county has few revenue diversification options. This is an issue that you've heard about before. We lack significant control over a good chunk of the revenue side of our operating budget. On the good news side, debt service is projected to fall from 4.5% to 3% of total expenditures. Again, keeping in mind that this does not include the provision in the state biennial budget bill. In the base model, it is assumed then that the savings on debt service would be used to offset cost to continue increases in other areas. And as we'll see in an upcoming slide, the county has made significant progress on the structural deficit over the last couple of years. So as of the 2011 adopted county budget, you can see the structural deficit is approximately $13 million in 2012. It grows to $28 million in 2013 and continues to rise to approximately $74 million by 2016. And you see the relatively small increase between 2014 and 15, and that's due, as I mentioned before, to the decrease in debt service that's currently projected. Now, that debt service, as I mentioned, doesn't include the provision in the state biennial budget, and it also assumes that we continue the existing discipline we have with the capital program. The next slide provides a history of the structural deficit based on past versions of the forecast. The first version of this forecast, done after the 2009 adopted budget, showed a structural deficit approaching $120 million in 2009. As a result of the 2010 adopted budget, the structural deficit for 2012 shrank to about $60 million. And after the 2011 adopted budget, that figure for 2012 shrank to just about $13 million. One other thing to mention is that these structural deficit figures and the previous assumptions of increases in personnel costs include all of the 1972 changes and the assumption that we would achieve those provisions. The next two slides show some of the changes in two of the major drivers that were discussed before. The 2009 adopted budget version of this program had assumed that healthcare expenditures would be about $176 million in 2012. As a result of some of the changes that have been made over the last two budgets and some of the changes in actual experience, the 2012 assumption is that expenditures will be about $149 million, a savings off a structural deficit of about $27 million. As you can see, the lines basically increase at the same rate, so the assumption continues that healthcare expenditures will increase by about 9% annually. And the next slide is pension contributions. The 2009 adopted version assumed about $89.3 million in pension costs in 2012. The 2011 adopted version has those down to about $63 million, and this includes pension obligation bonds. Some of the reductions on the pension side include good returns from 2009 and 10, the amortization of the Mercer settlement, and this provision, as well as the previous version on health insurance or health care costs, also take into account the reduction in the number of FTEs. Between 2009 and 2011, there was a reduction of about 300 FTEs. So those account for some of the changes that you've seen. So that's a little bit of the overview of the structural deficit as it existed after the 2011 adopted county budget. Now we move on to consideration of how the state biennial budget will impact forecast. These numbers you've seen before in the previous report, a reduction of about $25.7 million in operating aids. And one thing to note as we go forward in the forecast, the numbers that we have right now do not make any assumption on the state takeover of income maintenance due to the uncertain nature of how that might work, how that might affect our the levy that we provide with that program. It also does not include any assumption that will reduce tax levy for debt service. Back when this presentation was put together, there was some uncertainty about how that might affect the forecast going forward. The next table you saw in the previous report, the net impact in 2012 as far as reduction in state aids is about $18.4 million. So the effect on the structural deficit of assuming that the state biennial budget is implemented with the corresponding reduction in state aids results in a structural deficit in 2012 of about $38 million. That includes the original $13 million that you saw before, plus $18 million net reduction in state aids. And then it also includes a reduction in property tax increase of about $6 million. So that's how you get to the $38 million figure. This version assumes that property taxes are allowed to increase 1% annually as opposed to the 3.1% annually that you saw on the previous slide. The impact of that, the impact of the to the structural deficit of the biennial budget out in 2016, the original version would have been a $75 million deficit. As a result of the state biennial budget and these assumptions, that grows to about $126 million. So this chart, next chart, basically shows the impact of the biennial budget on the and comparing it to previous history. It basically shows that the county has taken a couple steps forward and the state biennial budget represents a step backwards. There are some additional concerns, as I've mentioned. There's about $500 million in Medicaid reductions that are too vague to be considered. We don't make an assumption yet for income maintenance takeover. This does make certain assumptions that the budget repair bill will be made legal. And as noted previously, significant employee concessions are already included in the adopted budget. And also the valuation of new construction. So in summary, the forecast is always a work in progress. We're always updating our assumptions to be a little more accurate. We're always looking for new variables to help us forecast into the future. The goal is to provide a consensus-driven baseline of the county's financial situation. The structural deficit does persist. And the county has made significant progress in addressing it. Obviously, though, there's still work to be done. As more changes are made to the state biennial budget, we do have the opportunity, you know, once it's adopted, maybe to provide another version once some more unknowns are known. And with that, I'll take any questions about the model or the forecast.
Mr. Hare.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I could just add some perspective here. It's been a real pleasure to work with DAS and other operating fiscal staff and external fiscal professionals to come up with this model. It's a very useful tool. It's something I wish we'd started years ago. It provides us with a perspective on the challenges that we face, and those challenges are serious. But I think DAS would agree that when we look at this model and we look at those stacked up bar charts going out into the future, this is our way of telling you what our budget would look like if we just use the current assumptions into the future. We all agree that every year you adopt a balanced budget. And to the extent that the things you do in each budget are long-term in nature, and recently you've done a lot of that, you change that line. And you begin to pull the revenue expense closer together. You take those bar charts up toward north. And that's a significant thing for you to know, because this chart could put some people in a position where they just throw their hands up and walk away. But these challenges are surmountable with leadership and some good decision making. They've clearly been exacerbated by the state's budget. I mean, that's just a given at this point that we'll have to deal with as a government. But the other thing you'll notice in Unicast and in the presentation today, nowhere is there any mention of a $1.5 to $2 billion budgetary shortfall that some of you may have been reading about or heard about in the community. I think that's an intellectually dishonest set of numbers. I think it distorts the true challenge that you face, which is a significant one. But that $1.5 to $2 billion ticket is not a, quote, budgetary shortfall. It's an accumulation of all of the long-term liabilities that we face as a government, most significantly the OPEB, which, as you all know, has a tail. It's a long tail. It will go out probably till 2060, but it does peak in 2030 or thereabouts and begin to come down. So I just think that it's important for you to understand that every year you adopt a balanced budget, especially if it includes not just one-time changes in the way we do things, but long-term changes, you begin to pull these lines closer together. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any comments?
I always appreciate Mr. Hare's can-do attitude. What this tells me is the gains we've made towards getting structural deficit under control have really been wiped out by the budget repair, but, I mean, almost. So as we make gains and do the correct things, the state basically takes advantage of those gains and then puts additional pressures on us to continue the concessions without really the ability to, in my opinion, continue to affect it. I do have one question. Where did you come up with the personnel cost 5.4, this is on page 7. That is through 2016. And just, you know, we only have today's snapshot, if you will. So, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but that seems a little bit aggressive.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's the aggregate average increase in all of the account types that could be considered personnel costs. So health insurance, for instance, is within that bucket. It's assumed to increase by about 9% annually. Wages, salaries and wages, which makes up about $250 million, probably the largest single chunk of that bucket, is projected to increase closer to 3%, I believe.
So the fringe benefits doesn't include the health insurance?
Yes, fringe benefits includes health insurance, pension, and some of the other non-salary personnel costs.
And I guess I don't get the 5.4 and the 7.7. Is the 7.7 within that?
Yes. So there's a certain chunk of the personnel cost that is growing faster than some of the other accounts within that bucket. So that just shows that fringe benefits continues to be a driver of the structural deficit, growing at an average annual increase of 7.7% per year.
I guess we could draw another chart showing real take-home pay for county employees is actually laid out, is it not? I mean, that's another way of expressing that. Because I think sometimes there's a way to look at this which kind of assumes that, you know, these folks are actually walking home with more money, and that's not true. We've been requiring employees to take more and more of the hit on this, and we need to emphasize that our employees are not, in fact, getting those kinds of increases. They're also, at the same time the county's taking the hit, our employees are taking the hit. Is that a fair statement?
Depending on specifically which employee, in general, yes, the compensation costs for the employees is increasing, and whether that's shown in the employee's paycheck or not, it's probably accurate, yes.
And I don't know if this chart we could show that. I mean, I'd like to show that the employees aren't the ones that are just, you know, not having to feel any of these sacrifices, because they are. And it would be an interesting chart to add to this if you could somehow do that. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Smith?
Well, I guess I just on that theme in kind of fairness, too, is that, you know, all the commentary and that the government is bloated and, you know, takes up too much of the costs. And if you look at our history just in the last decade, we're 20% down in full-time employees. I mean, you know, everybody talks about the government's a great job provider, it's bloated, you know, just more people jump on the bandwagon. One of our major problems is we have always, and we will continue, I would think, to have less and less people pay for more and more people. We go down in full-time employees, and we add to our retirements, and retirements are being added all the time. And this is why we have to look at, you know, we did something about OPED. I like Mr. Herr trying to give it a perspective also, that we've had to work in these situations. I said, as in your governmental area that we've been talking about a lot in the budget, I don't think we are going to throw up our hands and give up, because we never have. Things change at higher levels too. We just realize we're a creature of the state, and that's something we're never going to change unless the Constitution changes. I don't see that happening, so we're going to have to just do what we have to do. But even in health, we talk about, you know, going up 9%. Well, you know, we did some significant things in becoming self-insured a few years ago. Saved us millions of dollars, but doesn't mean that health insurance doesn't go up. We have just, you know, skewed it, so instead of going up 15% and 10% and 20%, which we had going, now it's going up 5%, or you're talking about 7 or 9%, but maybe as we pay more in that, that won't go up quite as much. So, and these are forecasts, I would, again, second and corroborate, obviously, what our auditor said, and you know, and you're doing the job that you have to do, but I am not going to let this dictate to me, or else I'd be out of government a long time ago. We'll see what happens. But, you know, there is always ways to adjust. We have balanced budgets. Things can change. And, I mean, we're talking about major, major deficits just in the last year. All of a sudden, we had a surplus at the end of the year. It's how we handle things and how we cooperate and look at things, and that we need to make our case to the state, as I mentioned before, because we can't do it alone. But and we appreciate Dana as much as we can. Good numbers. I know it's a difficult thing to do. I don't know if complain is the right word. I mean, I've tried to ask that in the last two or three years. So when we get a budget from DAS, you know, the finance committee gets the budget, and it's you know, if we're going on numbers that were in August or in June, and, you know, you say how dynamic this is, a changing process, you have to go back and look at it again. I'm just saying whatever possible, and I'll talk to the new county executive on this too, that somehow we can have an adjustment to the budget just before it comes to finance, because we base these budgets on these projections and things we look at over time, what happens with the labor bill, what happens in the economy, do we have another insurance? There's just so many things here that we can control, but that maybe before we get that budget, or else then we make it, you know, everything else goes up, but of course now we're in a situation where we can't go up. Many of us don't want to raise taxes either. But the reality is that sometimes, you know, look at the costs and just our transportation and fuel. How do you like $4 a gallon, everybody? Is that doing everything great? How much has our energy costs gone up in the last decade, the last year? And I see Johnson Controls comes in the room, and I see We Energies, and I'm not going to blame any of them either. They're a business. But they're going up 5, 9%. This is going up 10%. Everything goes up. And we have no ability to make any adjustments. And to think that if you stay level that, you know, things aren't going to get worse, it's just a reality. So, you know, we have these challenges. Nothing's new, so I'm kind of talking out loud to help myself get through this process again. But we're not going to give up, I guess is the point. Thank you.
Thank you. One question on page 9, when you show the slight increase from 2014 to 2015, and you stated that was decrease in our debt. So
yeah, that's another whammy we get.
Does it take into consideration the steps that the county has, or the steps taken by the county to address debt management when we refinance a number of our bonds? So is that number incorporated within the adjustment between 2014 and 2015, or has that been left out?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, yes, it does include it. It does include that those decisions.
Ms. Bryant, you were kind of accomplished.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, it includes the number, but it includes an estimate,
okay.
Not the actual. So the number actually would be an improved number because of the CLP.